Right. When Dave asked me if I'd say something out the front 2 weeks ago, I freaked out as I always freak out. So, and he said the message when you go out the front is what you need to hear, so that's what I need to hear this. And what Val shared out the front is relevant to what I'm going to say, because when she shared about Rosemary and Sarah, it's Val's kindness. God used Val's kindness to help soften their hearts. And so remember that. I called this little talk the Samos heart. That won't mean anything to you, but it will in a minute. But it's on Hebrews 3:15, which says, "Today, if you all hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion." And the Message Bible says, "Today, please listen. Don't turn a deaf ear as in the bitter uprising." This scripture refers to the Israelites in Exodus 15:22. They were complaining about the waters being bitter at Marah. They'd seen this amazing miracle of the Red Sea being parted and God annihilating the Egyptian army, and yet they'd been 3 days without water, and they were saying, "Oh, the water's bitter and we can't drink it," which is understandable actually, but they were focusing on that. They weren't focusing on what God could do spiritually. They were focusing on what was happening in the natural world, which was they were terribly thirsty and there was no water to drink. And because they were complaining, although they were complaining to Moses, they are actually hardening their heart to God. And when you harden your heart to God, unbelief sets in, and this is what happened. But God sorted it out for them and they were able to drink it. But believe it or not, very, very soon they were at it again. They had no water. "Oh, you brought us out of Egypt. You brought us here to die." And they were complaining to God again. And he had 40 years of that. But we're not unlike him. And he's saying this scripture because he's saying, don't be like them. Don't be unbelieving or distrusting of me. And it's a day-by-day journey. It isn't a one-off thing when you first become a Christian. So, interestingly, the Hebrew word for hear and obey is the same. They're complaining about God, hardened their hearts. And we're supposed to harden our hearts to the devil, not to God. The disciples were very, very much the same. I need a drink. Hang on.
Is that what they said?
No. My mouth starts to stick together. That made you laugh last time, didn't it? Anyway, I get a lot of comfort from the disciples because they are just like us. And I didn't know that Martin was going to read that scripture. I probably should have done, but I didn't. And this is the disciples in Mark 8:17. He'd just done an amazing miracle. Jesus had just fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves. Absolutely amazing. Then he fed 4,000 people with 7 loaves. And then you have the disciples. They get in the boat. "Oh, we've only got 1 loaf. What are we going to do?" And this is what Jesus says to them. But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "Why do you reason because you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Is your heart still hardened? Having ears, you do not see, and having eyes, you do not see, and having ears, you do not hear. And do you not remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of fragments did you take up?" And you can imagine them being a bit sheepish, 12. And then he says, "Also, when I broke the 7 for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of fragments did you take up?" 7, they said. So he said, "How is it you do not understand? You know, what part of feeding 5,000 people don't you get?" And we're the same. Well, I am anyway. I don't know about you. But,
so am I.
Oh. William Barclay, in his commentary, explains it better than me, so I'm going to read this. And he says, Jesus reminded them twice he had satisfied the hunger of huge crowds with food enough and to spare. It is as if he had said, why all the worry? Don't you remember what happened before? Hasn't experience taught you that you don't need to worry about things like that if you're with me? The odd fact is that we learn only half the lessons of experience. Too often experience fills us with pessimism, teaches us what we cannot do, teaches us to view life with a kind of resigned hopelessness. But there are other experiences. Sorrow came, and we came through it still erect. Temptation came, and somehow we did not fall. Illness took us, and somehow we recovered. A problem seemed insoluble, and somehow it was solved. We were at our wit's end, and somehow we went on. We reached breaking point, and somehow we did not break. We too are blind. If we would only read the lessons of experience aright, it would teach us not the pessimisms of the things that cannot be, but the hope which stands amazed that God has brought us thus far in safety and in certainty, and the confidence that God can bring us through anything that might happen. Right, before I go on, I'm going to introduce you to Samos, which is what this story title. This is Samos. He is a lemon. He's a lemon, believe it or not. And I'll put him here. I'll pass him round later. But in the year 2005, I went to a Greek island called Sakanthos with my family. And there were some beautiful trees full of vibrant lemons. And Samos was one of those. And he was living on a tree that was giving him life. And he was living with his brothers and sisters. And he looked like this. Only he looked a lot better because he had green leaves. And he was sitting on that tree happy with his brothers and sisters. And he had a destiny and a purpose. He had a destiny as a lemon. And a lemon can be used in many ways. It can be used to enhance and flavour. And lots of uses for lemons. But all that changed when he was picked. And I took him captive for my own purposes, and that was to be a memento of my holiday. And I took him home and isolated him away from everything he knew and put him in a cupboard at home. And gradually over 5 years, that's what happened to him. He's now rock hard. Right. And there's no hope for him, because he's a lemon and he hasn't have a soul. But we do, and there's loads of hope for us, and we have Jesus. But many things can take us away from God, and although our hearts aren't as bad as that, everybody in this room will have little patches of Samos in their hearts. And things that we need to allow God to work on, things like anger, resentment, bitterness, pride, stubbornness, our thoughts, our attitudes. The list is endless. And then unforgiveness. Unforgiveness is the biggie, and that can make your heart hard, really big. And if we hang on to grudges and resentments and offences and meditate on them, that's where our focus will be. And it won't be on God. It will be focused on that, and it will come out in how we speak and our attitude and everything else. But he does understand how hard it is, and that the hardness of our hearts is actually protecting us, even though it's keeping us prisoner. Now I'm going to give you an example of a very tiny offence, but it just shows you if this can be a tiny one, what can happen with a bigger one. 3 weeks ago on my paper round, I had been at CWR all day, and I was really tired. and I had to do my paper round late. I was just getting to the end of it, and this woman told me off because I walked across her front garden. And I said, okay, sorry. But in my head, I was thinking, oh, get a life. It's only a bit of grass. There's no flowers. Do you call that a front garden? This was in my head. And I went home thinking, because I don't like being told off. And then I told Ashley about it, and I told Irma about it, and a few other people. And I thought, well, no, I've got to get over this. You know, I wouldn't particularly like people walking over my front garden, probably. But anyway, now I was focusing on that. Now when I see that woman, she might be wonderful, but I will think, that's the woman that told me off. And it will kind of, I'll put up a tiny little barrier, a guard with her. And that's just a small thing. So you can imagine what big things do. But you might say, I don't feel forgiveness towards that pig of a person who hurt me really badly. But the thing is, it isn't about feelings, it's about choice. And if you choose to say, even if it's only, Lord, I want to forgive, that's a real start. And let God, you're not letting them go, you're letting God deal with them. And even if they never say sorry, and even if they don't give their lives to Jesus, then they're going to end up in front of God on Judgment Day, and that will be worse than anything that's ever they've done to you. And we have examples in the Bible of people who could have had ended up with a Samus heart, but they didn't. Take Joseph, for example, the one with the coat of many colours. He was only a teenager when his brothers threw him in the pit. It would have been really scary. He would have been lonely and afraid. He was taken away from his father, who adored him, sent as a slave. It would have been quite horrendous. And I'm sure he didn't go, oh, well. He would have had to work through loads and loads of feelings. But nowhere does it say he had bore any grudge, and he didn't bear a grudge against Potiphar's wife, who wrongly accuses him of trying to seduce her. And at the end, he forgives his brothers. I mean, that's amazing. And then there's David, a man after God's own heart. King Saul was really horrible to him, tried to kill him, but he didn't bear him any malice. He respected him. Saul was jealous and tried to kill him, and even his own son, Absalom, plotted against him and tried to take his kingdom. But David asked the soldiers to protect his son in battle in spite of it. I'm not trying to make forgiveness sound easy. It's incredibly hard. It took me years to forgive my husband, even though God had forgiven me so much. I struggled with it, and I have forgiven him now, and I don't bear him any malice. I don't want to particularly be buddies with him, but as God softened my heart, he showed me how horrible I'd been to him and all the terrible things I'd done in my marriage and my part in it. And I still wouldn't want to go to his house. That would hurt me. But if God told me to, you know, I would. But it was a struggle. It really was. And as God deals with the Samus areas in your life, and your heart softens, you are vulnerable, but God is with you every inch of the way. And if I stick a pin in Samos, he's not going to feel anything. He's nothing. I can't even penetrate his shell. If I stick a pin in that lemon, it will leak like we cry. But who would you rather be? Would you rather be Samus or that beautiful, vibrant lemon there? I'm going to read you a story now, entitled, Have I Got Time? kindness of strangers, and that's why I mentioned Val and her kindness to Rosemary. I'll have to read this because I won't be able to remember it. Kindness of strangers. Among the 52 people killed by the 7/7 suicide bus and tube bombings was 24-year-old Jenny Nicholson. Her mother, Reverend Julie Nicholson, said she was overcome with anger and rage and felt that this was an unforgivable act. In her book, A Song for Jenny, she tells us that she chose to step down from her position in the church as she was unable to forgive the bombers who killed her daughter, and therefore she couldn't minister to people about peace or forgiveness. I believe God would have been so pleased with her bravery and honesty in making that choice, even though he was saddened by the developing bitterness. However, God never lets us go, and from that moment he would have been working on her thoughts and the condition of her heart to soften it and bring her back to a good place. She talks of the kindness of strangers and that they played a big part in her journey to healing. And this is her taxi driver story. A week after her daughter's death, she went to St. Paul's Cathedral to a special service and 2 minutes silence for the victims. It was very emotional, and afterwards she wanted to get home. She started to walk to the tube station because she couldn't get a taxi, but suddenly couldn't face the underground and started to panic. Just then a taxi pulled up to let someone out and Julie jumped in, but the driver said he couldn't take her as he was just finishing. But when he saw her face and asked her where had she been, and she told him all about it, he said, "Okay, I'll take you. Where are you heading for?" And she told him Paddington Station. When they got to the station, the driver said, "Where do you want to go? I will take you anywhere you want to go." And he drove her all the way to Reading, where she lived. As she was getting out, he said, "You must have a very low view of humanity at the moment, and I just want you to know that there are still good people in the world," and he refused to take a fare from her. We may never know when or how we're used in the process of reversing the Samos heart. The cab driver went the extra mile, literally, too, and that spoke volumes to her, and today she forgives. I suggest you read her book. I've already ordered it from the library, so you won't get it there. Corrie ten Boom, she was a Christian woman who survived a Nazi concentration camp during the Holocaust. She said, "Forgiveness is to set a prisoner free and to realize the prisoner was you." And hard as it was, she did and found freedom. This week, a lady gave me a testimony to read, and she had been through horrendous things. And she could have had a Samus heart, but she hasn't, and she's a beautiful lemon. And it's a privilege to know her. I'm going to read you Isaiah 40. I did not know that Kevin was going to read it, but I'd want you to just hear it again, and then I'm going to play a song. "But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint." Whatever needs to be dealt with in your life, God will be there, and you can rise up on the eagle's wings and he'll do it. Right. And I'll pass Samus round if you like. It doesn't matter if you break him. He's served his purpose enough. Thank you.